All right, everybody, it's 7 p.m. Eastern time in the United States, Boston area proper for me. Thank you, everybody, for dropping into the USA Rugby Happy Hour Clubhouse Room. We are here until 8 o'clock to talk all things USA Rugby. If you want to comment, would like to get up here, ask a question, raise your hand, and we'll get you up here on stage as soon as possible. Anything rugby is great. We have lots of people that know things up here on stage, including our today's guest. Before we get to him, share this room with your friends, teammates, family, anybody that loves the game of rugby, loves USA Rugby. One way you can do that is maybe send them a message with a link on your social media, or give them a call right now, or simply click the plus sign at the bottom right of this screen and ping them into the room. Again, if they're not in Clubhouse, text them now, call their parents, whatever you need to do, get them in the house, get them on their phone, and have them listen to this Clubhouse tonight. It's a big one. Lastly, visit our bios here on Clubhouse and give us a follow, and we'll follow you right back, both here and our social media channels as well. I am Bill Baker of Eagles Overseas, also the host of the Eagle-Eyed Rugby Podcast. Beginning of the season 3 has kicked in. We have two interviews right now. AJ McGinty a couple weeks ago, and this week is Capelli Pippoletti from Saracens, who happens to be starting at number 2 for USA this weekend. And I'm assuming he's there, my co-host John Fitzpatrick, to introduce himself.
Hey, Bill. Thanks a lot. Hey, everyone. As Bill mentioned, I'm John. I'm from Rugby Morning. I write a daily newsletter for the American rugby fan. And the email is delivered into your inbox 6 days a week and will keep you informed on the top rugby news in 5 minutes or less. And you can sign up at rugbymorning.com. As Bill mentioned, you might hear some little ones behind me. It's bath time here, so I'm going to try not to drop my phone in the bathtub, but we'll see.
We're looking forward to that kind of sound, John. That'd be awesome. And now for our special guest tonight, please, ladies and gentlemen, no flash photography. Peacock Sports Analyst, USA Rugby Hall of Famer, and so many accolades we could list, but just not enough time tonight. Please welcome Dan Lyle. Dan, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, wonderful. The clock is ticking. I'm heading off to touch rugby in a little while, so still trying to keep the old legs ticking over.
Yeah, well, you touch rugby. I know we talked about that earlier, but are you like the ringer on the team?
No, I'm too old to be ringer. You know, I'm kind of a connector now, more than a ring. So.
And who do you have in your team? Do you like, I have a whole bunch of Colorado All-Stars or your boys on the team, anything like that?
Yeah, I played with my sons, which is fantastic. They're playing soccer now, so rugby. We play more rugby in the spring. But yeah, I played with the Boulder old boys is the list. But there's kind of a front range conversation. A lot of guys come from Superior, Lafayette, Louisville. Those that know this neck of the woods around Boulder. But yeah, it's great.
And speaking of Colorado, Dan, you know, this is completely off script. I played out there a couple of times, played against Vail before, of course, the Denver sides. There's actually some rich rugby in Colorado. You know, there's some really good old boys sides. You know, what is it about Colorado? What's in the water out there?
Well, I think it's probably why, it's a top five place to live in America, this area. Top five place to work. You know, there are so many of the Fortune, tech companies have good HQs here. It's just a wonderful place to raise family. There's space, there's diversity, there's kind of freedom kind of on both sides of the aisle in a lot of ways, so there's a lot to be excited about, and so much to do, and really kind of the four seasons, all year round. So.
Yeah, and a couple of times I've been there to Vail, which is obviously, a beautiful town. I mean, the entire state of Colorado is beautiful. But there were a few players in that Vail side that were definitely over in Colorado to train in the altitudes who are currently playing over in Europe. So a lot of good talent in those higher altitude towns. But no, it's exciting to get out there if anyone's still playing club rugby, that kind of thing. If you ever schedule a match against Boulder or Vail, whoever else, you should definitely do. It's a great trip. So, Dan, a couple of things. Obviously, our big topic tonight is going to be USA-Canada, not just last week, but this weekend's match. I just want to talk to you about you a little more. And this is something I was thinking about earlier today, because you and I talked on Eagle-Eyed Rugby Podcast this past year. We talked a lot about Bath. We talked about you. you know, making your way over there, and you just weren't an American playing over there in that league, but you were a big name. I mean, I don't know if you ever think about that, but you were, again, not just American, but you were leading that team. I mean, have you thought about how much, you know, throughout your life after playing rugby, you know, a Bath legend, USA Red legend, ever think about your impact on the game in USA much at all?
Well, black and white television, you know, times, you know, pre-social media, you know, you have to kind of, you know, all of my tries of going from 10 meters to 50 meters, right? Because there's no real proof points. But look, I was really lucky, very lucky, from a sense that there was a meritocracy, almost a player-driven meritocracy at Bath. And if you came in and played well, both the players, the coaches, and the fans, and Bath is truly a rugby city, you know, in a soccer-dominated country, you know, they accepted you. And, you know, I was able to have a sustained, you know, higher level of play. And I think that probably in itself took a lot of people by surprise. Then it became, hey, this guy can play, you know, this American can play. And then it was, hey, this guy can really play rugby, and maybe it's one of those proof points, you know, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, sustainable that we as Americans have, you know, the capacity to go toe to toe with the rest of the world. Certainly have been, you know, a handful of other gents and now lovely to see females, you know, entering the Alliance 15s, you know, in the premiership over there, showing the, you know, that same thing. So, you know, probably just kind of you know, somebody that was able to jump over a hurdle, maybe pull a little bit down with me so that a few others can, could jump into it as well.
And, you know, something I mentioned in my introduction to you is the many hats you've worn. And I think you're one of the few people that have succeeded at the international level on the pitch, but also off the pitch in rugby, you know, with your Peacock Sports and, you know, AEG, you know, your company as well. You know, it just seems like a dream to me to be able to do that, to work in the sport, make a living off of it. You know, obviously it's not that easy. So, I mean, can you just talk about your path to where you are now? I mean, obviously that could be a long conversation, but just briefly talk about that. I mean, how did you get where you are now?
Yeah, I think that, you know, now that we have MLR and, you know, we have high level of college and the things that we're doing and people are looking at careers afterwards, while you're a professional rugby player, you need to be looking at what you're not doing afterwards. And I got involved in off-field activities, not just at the rugby club, by doing anything that, you know, from speaking engagements to coaching engagements to whatever they needed to really kind of engross myself and stay busy and understand things and have a creative and fluid mind. But also getting involved in the Players Association and being part of that executive, you know, that was the first collective bargaining agreements, the first player welfare agreements, you know, and a lot of those things. I guess I made a choice early that I wasn't going to get into the X's and O's side. I was going to be a coach. And get over there. I was more going to be on the administrative business side of things. And I was on a path to kind of do what Andrew Duartolo or Blaine Scully are doing now, or kind of some of my past, Gary Hines and Ray Lehner's kind of go to Oxford and transition into an MBA and figure out if rugby or other parts of business was there. And USA Rugby, it was when the first, I'll still call it tier two grants, right after the 2003 World Cup were being really conceptualized by World Rugby. And I was kind of asked to maybe come over and help construct those first high performance plans. And so I left. I had gone to Leicester after Bath. I left Leicester halfway through the year and took a job with USA Rugby. And so, you know, I guess the nugget out of that is to be thinking about what you want to do, you know, the first year you start playing professionally, and hopefully you have a degree or something to fall back upon, but continuously look outside the sport for both professional and, you know, and recreational kind of, you know, mind release is what I used to call it. So.
And when did in front of the camera start coming into the picture for you?
Well, I think, you're probably, as a senior player and as a captain, you're always kind of in front of the, camera or in front of the microphone, and you're giving a lot of after dinner speeches. Bath asked me to do a lot of that. US asked me to do a lot of that. So I think that was a natural progression. Certainly it's a craft that I've not perfected. You've got to do it week in and week out like everybody else. I'm kind of a stand-in every now and again. I like to say I have a day job. I find it really, I've negotiated or be part of the negotiations for a lot of those contracts. And not just with NBC, with others, just kind of having conversations with people and connecting people on both sides of the pond. And so I like to say I kind of negotiate myself a little bit of a, something inside of each contract. That's obviously a joke, but it's something you got to continuously get better at. But I think it's something that you can stay relevant. You touch the game, at a high level on a regular basis, and so it's fun, to be to see that you get to know the players, the coaches, and kind of the who's relevant and real today.
Yeah, and Dan, I think you do a great job. And whether you're in the studio or on the sidelines at World Cup Sevens or whatever, it's definitely great to have a guy with your knowledge on the sidelines, and definitely have become, if you ask me, probably the premier United States rugby analyst, let's say. But let's talk a little bit about the broadcast. And again, guys, I definitely want to get into USA Canada. We will definitely get there soon. There's a lot to talk about. But Dan, just let's talk real quick. As always now, and you see it on social media, people complain about, USA rugby matches being behind a paywall or OTT or, what is the state right now? I know Flow Rugby has a contract for, I think, for another 2 years of USA Rugby. Peacock has an amazing package as far as premiership, Six Nations, which is actually relatively inexpensive, and it's a great deal if you ask me. ESPN used to have matches on, not as much anymore. They do, I think, I'm sorry, they do have the, whatever it is, the Pro 16 or something like that. But talk to me, when we talked about it, like 10 years ago, you said you had to go into a bar to watch a match with your kid. Talk about the growth of broadcasting USA Rugby here or rugby in the United States, and where's it going next?
Well, let's start with the good news. The good news is that every single major broadcaster in the United States, the traditional broadcasters, all have an awareness of, or are a little piece of the pie, if not a bigger piece of the pie, of rugby. And I think that then you want, on top of that, the OTT, the digital partners that don't have a linear, so the likes of Flow and Danzen or the Amazons and Twitters and things like that, they're all touching and feeling, if not immersed in the space as well. So there's lots of potential and opportunity. But I think we've said this a few times with each other, Bill, was that potential and opportunities are both great words and evil words all at the same time, right? You got to realize potential. You got to realize opportunity. So how do you craft a good plan, a good path forward, so that more and more people can watch rugby? I think that that's the fundamental, is that we don't expose the game on a regular basis to enough people, right? And so how do you get that? How do you get your awareness and your value quotient work, right? How does that blend together? And what those people are looking like, so the linear and digital people out there, they're looking at eyeballs and subscriptions, right? They want more people to watch it. That drives sponsorship, that drives ancillary revenue, and they want subscriptions, right? That's real transactional money that they put in their pocket on a monthly basis, if not a pay-per-view basis, right? So how do you find that balance, along with sticking with that value and awareness structure, right? So you want to grow your game, and you want to get more moms and dads and athletic directors and others watching the game. So that's a whole a study in itself, and opinions on how we could do all of those things. But certainly we're in a position where more people are paying attention to it from the corporate level, but it's really transitioning into, a mass appeal conversation, which means that we have to kind of do some things that are a little bit beyond that. I want to compliment MLR, who went in with this saying that they're going to have to spend money to get those eyeballs, create their free network, get in with CBS, initially ESPN, now with Fox. They're putting themselves out there, they're paying the production, they're doing all those things to try to gain, in essence, of commodity, the fan, the subscriber, and that stuff. So, that's something that USA Rugby is not doing. And so that's where the argument or the debate would come in at this point.
And lastly, about broadcasting, Dan, is there, how long do you think, I mean, and this could be a guess, this could be just candy for us, but I mean, is there a date soon or a year soon where we could possibly see USA matches outside of the paywall, maybe on an ESPN, or I know Peacock is paywall, but it seems definitely more accessible. Do we foresee it being in front of more eyes, in front of more non-rugby eyes, let's put it that way.
I think you have to redefine paywall, right? I get paywall, right, from a sense of I have to pay, for this match, whether it's in real time or on a monthly basis. But through our cable bills, we were, ESPN, Fox Sports, NBC Sports Network, we're all paying for that. They're charging 3, 5, 6, 7, 8 bucks to the cable provider, who's then charging us, right? So the conversation is really about, can we get it in front of enough people that are already paying, a subscription or a cable service? So can we get into, so I don't have to pay twice. I don't have to ask the masses to pay for it. I don't have to ask, to pay for it on top of what they're already doing, right? So the Peacock and the ESPN Plus, the two large digital OTTs connected to linear, right, that are doing this, $4.99, and now ESPN Plus, I think just went to $6.99. There's millions and millions and millions of people that have those, right? So you're saying, well, those are probably the platforms in order to get mass appeal, and hopefully they can uplift that to their linear channels, meaning ESPN2 or ESPN1 or ABC, and then in the sake of NBC, NBC, NBC's SN, USA Network, CNBC, and things like that, right? So and that's what Fox is doing with MLR, right? They don't really have a digital platform right now that to speak of, and so they're saying, hey, MLR, cool, do the Rugby Network, we'll take the games on FS1, FS2, and go from there. And see, and so it's pretty simple when you start thinking about it, but people have to be careful when they say, oh, it's behind a paywall, right? If it's behind a paywall that, like certain games are, and not to speak ill of too many people, but if it's behind a paywall and it's got very low subscription, and I'm having to pay a ton of money for that's where the value and awareness argument starts getting, pretty powerful, right? And so, that's the debate. I'm happy to talk more about that if we want to.
Is that why Flow has a higher price tag each month, because they just don't have the millions of viewers or subscribers?
That's a significant reason. I won't give it a percentage, but yeah, I mean, they have to charge more because they have to pay for the rights, from the, and then they have to produce it, and then, and so forth and so on. So, yeah, you're able to, if you're able to aggregate, you're able to either lower, or you're able to keep that supply demand conversation going, right? And so people set prices and they stick with it, and people can make their choices from there, right?
Right. All right. Got the business out of the way. That's good. Just real quick, everybody, a quick room reset, as we like to call it on Clubhouse. Again, thanks for dropping in at the US Rugby Happy Hour. We're here until 8 o'clock. Again, thank you so much for joining in. This is all about USA Rugby, all about talking about the sport in this country. You guys out there, please, if you want to comment, ask a question. If anyone up here, please raise your hand and we'll get you right in. It does not have to be on topic. It'll be about anything rugby. As long as we're talking about rugby, it'll be a great time. When you get up here, please be sure to mute your mic. And again, please also share this room with your friends. If you can get them in tonight, great. If not tonight, join us next week or the week after. We always have some really good information, great guests every week, and it's a lot of fun. And if, again, if you're not on Clubhouse, you know, send them a text. It's easy to get in here. It's free. And so it's a lot of fun. So Dan, moving on, let's get into one quick thing before USA Canada. I know I keep on teasing that. You know, you mentioned earlier the Premier 15s, Alliance Premier 15s. We have 10 USA women players in that league right now. Exeter Chiefs, Sale Sharks, Worcester Warriors, Lowboro Lightning. You know, the likes of Gabby Cantorna, Kate Zachary, Alicia Washington, to name a few. This is big for USA women's, especially for World Cup prep. And this is being allowed to happen right now. I know at one point they talked about, not allowing as many overseas players in this league. But, talk about that opportunity for these Americans to play at this level and what this means for their preparation for World Cup.
Yeah, I think you and I kind of we get giddy DMs with each other, right? When the next Women's Eagle, gets signed, and really excited about that. You know, I grew up with a super athletic sister, super athletic mother. Kind of, come from that world where equality and equity are long overdue. It's just really wonderful to see what's happening, and particularly now, they're up and running and they are playing and it is of such high quality, and the WPL is our competition and one that I hope continues to grow and flourish, but when it's going to be played and how it's going to be played, and some of these women's internationals aligning to these teams, and really just kind of immersing themselves in the sport. It's great because it's taken a sacrifice for those women. There's not a ton of money, they're really putting their lives on hold in order to kind of live the dream and try to get, they went to the semifinals in the last one. It was wonderful to see. Mm-hmm. And obviously we've got a great pedigree in our women's 15s team. So just putting it out there, trying to take that one step forward. And I'm loving seeing it and appreciative of those athletes.
Yeah. And this season they're actually streaming many more games on YouTube or on their, on the England Rugby channel, many more games, especially, I think we have one match this weekend, I believe, that's online for, I forget who it is, but there's definitely an American playing this weekend.
Yeah, scoring some tries, right? Kate Zachary and Alicia Washington, and, not just on these teams, but playing and captaining and significant mm-hmm. roles and doing some great things. And now the Sale is no longer the South African connection, right? It's now the U.S. connection, right? So,
well, the men are still the South African connection.
That's what I mean.
All right, everyone, let's move forward now. Last weekend, USA and Canada did not go as planned for USA Eagles, playing in their homeland, in Canada's homeland. I think USA played strong for about 5 minutes, and the wheels came off the bus. It looked like Gary was, in my mind, experimenting with certain lineups. You've been involved in many of these matches over the years, big World Cup qualifiers, that kind of stuff. Can you just talk at all, generally speaking, about the mindset of a team going into a match against Canada after maybe those two, big losses during the summer? What goes into a preparation for a game like that? And, was there a lot of pressure on their shoulders that maybe they shouldn't have had?
Yeah, certainly, that Newfoundland is a bit of a black hole for the U.S. And as are some places in South America and others. When we're talking apples to apples, two teams that have a lot of parity, right? And I won't say if one's better than the other in this initial comment, but you generally have to go into a foxhole, into a mentality, and that mentality sometimes causes you to kind of freeze up and not play to your potential. But generally what it means is that if you're getting outworked from an apples to apples perspective, and you're getting outsmarted in a lot of ways, that compounds the game. Errors are more frequent, a lot of things happen, and So I think that when I've been involved in games where we've won and lost at that level, and I was part of the team that won for the first time in Canada, and part of a team that won 3 times against Canada, and before it was they were always had a little bit more passion than us, it felt like. They always were a little bit smarter, more instinctual with the ball. And then we became smarter, and we started working, and our athletes took over and things like that. And then, we had, we rode a wave, and then we rode a significant wave, where Canada was just dominant for such a long time. And I think that they have to look at themselves in the mirror and say, and I can pinpoint several moments in that game where we weren't folding in defense. We weren't getting back on our feet and well enough. We were, we should have put the ball in certain people's hands and certain parts of the field at different times. And that comes from kind of that two fundamentals of, we were I thought we were outworked, and I thought we were outsmarted in general in that game.
Yeah, it just everything seemed to fall apart at some point also. I don't know if the pressure or just quicksand is the term I like to use. It seemed like line outs fell apart, everything just fell apart. So, looking at that, we have definitely a different lineup this Saturday. How does the team kind of put that behind them and forget about that and move on to a point where you need to win by 14 or more?
Well, using the lineout, something a place that I know really well, right? And I mean, literally a collapse, of the lineout. We couldn't win one, really, and that was such an attacking platform, and it could have pivoted into it, an off the top attacking platform, or some sort of a drive and spin and all kinds of things that could have happened. To me, that's. Guys missing throws, missing jumps, and all that. This is a professional team, right? These are people. All these players are coming from professional setups. So, they would have gone back and said, okay, how many of us missed assignments? How many of us, just were, deer in the headlights? Where did we go wrong with this? Because it fundamentally, that fell apart. I mean, to the point where you're so dominant in the scrum, and then you get pushed off your ball, with 15 minutes to go, right? Those things are they feel like they're more mental. They're for the or more like things that you can fix if you can fix your kind of your culture and coaching, which I think they would have gone back to and individualized the analysis, and obviously. There's some injuries and some other things that we probably don't all know about, and then there's some selections that they made based upon the performance of last game, as is proving out in what we've seen today in the announcement.
And then, you've been the captain of many sides. Bryce Campbell, I think, has done a really good job at captain for the USA side. But AJ comes in this weekend at number 10, has the captain patch on his shirt, his jersey. Is that's not a takeaway from Campbell, right? Is that just more of a, AJ playing at a certain level where they think he can be, I wouldn't, I don't know, is better leader the term I'm going to use, or is it just a more effective leader?
Well, I think it's a balance. I always tell people we were a better team. The U.S. was a better team when I was not the captain. And that was more along the lines of that, Dave Hodges became captain. One or two other guys were captain. I had a few injuries from now time to time. You need five, six, seven guys on the field that are captain-esque type people, right? Can turn to the guy, lead from the front, nudge somebody here and there, So I don't think it's a blight on Bryce, that AJ's the captain or vice versa. You actually need more of that, right? So I don't ever look at, the captain of the day is probably just somebody that represents the team. Maybe he's got a better, more experienced head to the biggest relationship is that with the referee. And, those subtle moments in practice and others where, but you, that's why I said you need multiple leaders, and so, not be knowing what's inside Gary's head and what's inside both of their heads. It's probably a relationship with the referee, a little bit of multiple leaders more than anything else.
And I think, honestly, I don't think it's I think it's a no-brainer for AJ. You know, obviously a very accomplished number 10, a playmaker for the USA side. Definitely a you know, a more creative playmaker than probably anyone else we have at 10. And that's no diss for McGee, whoever else, you know, great players. You know, AJ seemed during the press conference today with Gold and AJ, he definitely felt he didn't perform well last week, you know, and which I get. I don't think he did at all either. He just, you know, missed a kick for touch. You know, he errant pass led to a late try. You know, how do you expect even guys at AJ's level, how do you expect them to come back and play at the international level when they haven't played a match since June?
Yeah, that's the nature of the game, unfortunately, right? You know, and you know the depth or lack of depth. We're putting in young players. You know, in our midfield. You know, we've got 12 MLR teams. So you know, how many Americans are playing? You know, you could argue a lot of different scenarios here of why we are where we are. You know, I think. What I saw from AJ was somebody that wanted it probably just a hair too much, right, when he came in. And I've been guilty of that till I'm blue in the face, running around like your hair is on fire, trying to do every job that's yours and the two or three jobs that are also your – I mean, kick a ball, chase the ball, catch the ball, you know, then pass the ball. I mean, he probably tried too hard, you know. Right. And so I think that, you know, calming himself down, putting himself, you know, into the role that he plays at Sale, which is a leadership role, captaincy role, you know, driver role, you know, and then find those four or five touches that he, you know, that personified him for Sale this year. And just, you know, those touches were like, holy crap, you know, that was world class, right? He has that in inside of him, and if he can press that reset button, which I have every confidence he can, then and not try to do all things, then I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, and he's a big guy too. He's a guy that does not shy away from contact, which is a nice thing to see, especially at the international level. So everybody, real quick, another quick reset. We're about 7:30. Another 30 minutes left in the show. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a great conversation every Thursday night. We're here for another 30 minutes, like I said, till 8 o'clock. And if you don't know, our guest tonight is Dan Lyle. And again, if we encourage you to get up here and talk, ask some questions of either myself or Dan, or if my co-host John is able to join us. I think he might have dropped his phone in the bathtub. but raise your hand on the bottom right of the screen. You know, again, any question is great. Rugby, whatever else. I'm sure Dan also has a good recipe of, you know, pork ribs or something like that. But please, coming up. Ask anything away. It's all about the building the game here in the States and just having a great time talking about rugby. Just imagine you're sitting at the bar with myself or Dan, and we'll just talk rugby. Again, thanks again for joining us in, coming in here. So anyway, Dan, moving on. So, you know, Dan, Gary has gone with this kid, Lapidi, at center. You know, how much do you know about this kid? He's a big dude. He scored a try last weekend. Getting his first start, you know, what's the expectations of young guys like him?
Yeah, I tried to allude to it, you know, and again, I have nothing but respect and I can't wait till for the continued growth of MLR. But, you know, straight out of college, straight into the Eagles, right? You know, I've only seen him on tape for St. Mary's, you know, and certainly running over people, running around people, sidestepping, you know, doing a lot of damage at that level. You know, he's certainly there. You know, as I said, he made his debut last week. So it's really just hard to get a judgment of that. You know, I do feel that getting more pace into the team, getting a little bit more playmaker, you know, was good. You know, so I don't know what other choices, you know, we could debate those that Gary would have had. But getting somebody on that outside channel that – you know, they can make a break, you know, get a, you know, let Bryce, you know, take it up a couple of times, maybe off the top of a line out, maybe off of a scrum or two and create that wide channel with him in it. And maybe he certainly showed that he could offload the ball as well. So, you know, hoping he has a wonderful, you know, starting debut, you know, in second cap. And certainly we need that type of pace and that tempo, you know, I think, not just to overcome a 13-point deficit, but I just think it's a better way to play against Canada.
And size. I mean, Price and Tabeet are big guys. I mean, they can hit and they can be a presence in the center. Is that more important or less important than being able to hit the hole, or maybe hit back in with the forwards? You know, the size of a player like Campbell and Lapidi.
Yeah, I think the size matters when it matters, right? And so, you know, there's certainly a lot of players out there that are, you know, 185 pounds versus 225 pounds that are world class. You know, it's just a matter of how you use your body, what you do. The modern game, is more, attrition based. It's more, in your face. Games against Canada are generally more like that. So, you know, his ability to kind of have both of those, you know, in his toolbox is good. Mm-hmm. I feel you, Bill, in that comment. So, yeah, I'm eager to see, you know, if he is able to kind of use both of his strengths, both in his pace and evasiveness and his, confrontational capacity as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and being in front of a home crowd is definitely going to help with a kid like him. And again, we'll see how they do. And Gary Golden mentioned also about, he's keen on giving younger players more playing time. You know, you got Dabulis from DC is in the as a reserve. You know, we talk about Tavit, Jama. They're all solid players. But with that comment from Gary Gold, is this the right time to be making sure everyone gets playing time? You know, is it not the worst case scenario if we lose this match?
Well, America's one, America's two. I looked at the pools before, so I can't really remember. I think last time America's one might have been worse than America's two. Who you're playing. Certainly, you get more, you feel more confident. You've been in that position in the last World Cup, so you certainly want to qualify as America's one. Gary has not had, and the U.S. team has not had many games at all. You know, so who plays where and who plays who? As I said, certainly in the midfield. With Lasique being injured, mm-hmm. and coming back from injury, they were playing. Bracky and Marcel in the midfield as well. You know, I think he's better at fullback, which is, I think is good for him to be there. Like I said, there's not a lot of depth. You have to do it at some point. Would he have liked to have his best squad fit and available right now for these games? Absolutely. But sometimes, there's been all kinds of debuts at different times for different teams for different reasons, I wouldn't read too much into that. At this point.
Yeah. And looking at, let's move right up to the front row, Dan. We got Anu'u, Pifilletti and Taufe'e, a lot of experience there, even though, David and Joe aren't necessarily all three of them aren't necessarily getting a lot of starts, but they're close, but they are playing at the highest level in France and England. But what was really getting me right now is why Big Joe at prop? Why not Wengluski? Why not? I'm assuming maybe some injury somewhere. Mullen, TT has made himself unavailable. But, Joe's a big guy, but he didn't seem like he handled himself well last weekend up there.
Yeah, the dark arts, right? The technical capabilities of Joe Taifate at tight head prop against mm-hmm. this opposition. That's Gary Gold and Sean Pittman making that call, right? I don't know. I haven't seen him play enough at Lyon or anywhere else at that level to say good call or bad call. What I do know is that he leads the world in front five tries, right? Yeah. I do know he has the capacity. And I do know that this front row has to lock down this scrum, be efficient and technically sound in the line out, and they got to get the ball in their hands, and they've got to be what they're capable of being. We need better and more ball carriers, in our front five. Brakely and Savetta have to have a moment or two each, and they got to lock down what I thought was a weakness, which was fringe defense, and kind of the ability to launch, as well as we could have, So, that front row has the capacity to really, be athletic. So I'm looking forward to that, actually. It's one of the points that I think that we can really excel in on this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually really excited about them being in the starting 15. KP, he's actually really explosive hooker with Saracens, scores some tries. We all know about Big Joe off the hip. Scores a lot of tries from about 5, 10 meters out, if not more. And then David Nwu is still really young. A lot of people don't realize that, how young he really is. And to get a start in the World Cup against England, to get some starts with Toulouse. This kid Anu is the, I think, the future, obviously, of our pack in the front row. He's getting bigger every day. That kind of, I mean, you played at that level with Bath back in the day and all that stuff. But how's a kid like him handle that pressure? I mean, he went into the academy where I was there at a young age, and now he's getting minutes against top French front row and other players. I mean, what's that experience like for him?
Yeah, I think one person said that, as a front row, you got to fill a backpack, right? You got to fill a backpack full of scrums and full of moments, for a long time. And that backpack takes a while to fill, and so he's still filling his backpack. But it doesn't mean, that you can't perform exceptional without a full backpack, right? That's to become like a, a starter at a top 14 club. A not just a generational, but a prop that is somebody that people look upon over a World Cup cycle and say, hey, that guy made a significant difference. I think Dave is very much on that path, and has that capacity. In games like this against opposition where he can and should do very well against, he needs to do that. He needs to do that to gain more time moving forward, to be have more time at Toulouse, and to kind of solidify himself, at a level like that, and that's a, that's something that he can do. So I'm really looking forward to him to kind of fulfilling, some of that potential that he's got inside of him.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited about to see his growth. All right, moving out a little bit. We know Brakely and Savetta. Savetta is obviously a workhorse. Brakely, they're both the the power of the engine room of that pack, and they're both ruining teammates. Exceptionally good players together. Are we missing Greg Peterson, or are these two really good together?
Well, Greg had finally a run of games and proved that he was, a very good Premiership lock, starting week in and week out for Newcastle. So, Greg Peterson, and he's a hard object to move, he falls forward, and gets 3 to 5 meters, right? So, he's one of those guys. So, replacing him, with those guys, they have to do their jobs, well, and we need to see a couple of moments. We can't have, two offloads, a link, out wide, a poach, a slow down the ball at the right moment. We need to see a few moments from these guys. Otherwise, we just need to see that. Otherwise, what that position needs to offer this team against this team.
Right, and exactly, and I love Nick, I love Nate. They're solid players and great guys also, and they've proven, or at least Nick has proven himself overseas as well, Oxford guy. But moving out now, so we're looking at flankers, Jama Fanana Schultz and Henke. We know what they can do. I think Jama's really fitting in well with this team. But let's go straight to your wheelhouse, Dan. Let's look at Cam Doan at number 8. Questionable that he's going to be in this match. He got a head knock apparently in this last match. you know, he's been at the number eight position for a while now. I mean, for a long time. I remember seeing him playing against the Maui All Blacks in Philadelphia a number of years ago. Played overseas as well. You know, what would have been the impact on this team if he was not in the number eight this weekend?
Well, they don't have. It doesn't appear that they have many lineout options, you know, in the back row. And, you know, Nick and Nate, you know, and when Cam went out, as we talked about, and Dylan went out, you know, it all but fell apart, right? So, you know, their capacity, and if he's the only lineout brain on the team, and I'm not saying he is, right? Or the only one, you know, it can't do that. There has to be three or four guys on that team and those that are coming on that know this stuff like the back of their hand, right? And right. In test level where it is under pressure in a country and on a rock like Newfoundland over there where they just have, you know, that's when the pressure comes on. So you have to expect the unexpected, right? Where somebody like, if he goes off, who's going to step up, you know? And you got to have that, those scenarios going through in practice a few times. It was surprising because they had a week in Denver, then they had a week out there, that it would fall apart to the level that it fell apart. I think that's why Gary was so lost for words, right? How does this stuff fall apart to that level? You know, so they will be pinpointing that and looking at it and making sure that everybody's got their playbook and, you know, and understands it, not just their position, but two other positions. And, you know, but they are a little bit vulnerable. If he goes off, who is the third option, right?
Right. Who is it? Yeah. Who was the option behind you when you were playing?
Well, look, I had played in the back row, you know, with Hodges and Schubert, you know, and at different times, you know, who were both 6'4", 6'5", you know, as well, you know, and then Gross and Alec Parker, and we were always pretty tall, right? And it became one of our, who, you know, and so, you know, Dave had a good rugby brain, Court had a good rugby brain, you know, and we had some good props. You know, Kirk Kasijan, who was a hooker most of the time, he could call. And so we had a lot of guys that could do stuff, you know. And of course, before that, Tom Billups, who's now obviously coaching, so some smart guys, right? Yeah, that's what it falls back to, the AJ Bryce thing, right? You need two or three guys in that pack. You know, that's why I always want to, a lot of times you want a captain in the pack, right? Because you're closer to the action, closer to the referee, closer to that stuff, right? So, you know, that's why it naturally does that. So who, you know, those three or four guys, and Nick and Nate have got way enough experience to make sure everybody has got this, right? And go from there. So I would expect a completely, you know, different, you know, percentages going into this game. So.
Right.
Oh, sorry, coming out of this game. So.
Coming out of the game, yeah. So I'm going to go a complete tangent here, Dan. I want to talk about the lineouts with you for a minute. From back when you and I both played, not together, obviously, but when you were playing with USA or with your club sides, lineouts have changed so much since then. I mean, back when I started playing, at least, there was no lifting, let alone from the knees. You know, talk about that transition from where it was to it is now. It's such a different lineout game.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. The lineout is something that I think Americans should be pretty good at. It's one of those ones where it's very much like the offense and defensive line. You know, you call a play, you know, and then you can counter an audible and, you know, do a lot of things with and movement and counter movement and defensive postures. And there's a lot of stuff there. So I think if you look at it in that way and you understand kind of, you know, football to a degree, you can actually kind of geek out on it and actually can, it's something that we took took as a source of, hey, this is something we can actually be really good at. Right. And right. So I don't know the approach of this team and this coach well enough to say what, you know, where they're trying to pinpoint themselves, but it's something that you can balance. But it is very much a chess, you know, meets basketball, right? And so you have to have a little bit of cerebral capacity and you have to have some athleticism. And I think that's generally why we do pretty well as an American lineout. But certainly, everyone's got to be bought in, in order to make things happen, because it is truly, everybody's involved, and it's one of the very, very, very tight or quartered team. You're a bit of a ballet meets synchronized swimming,
Exactly. Hey, everybody, real quick again, a quick room reset. We've got about 10 minutes left. Thank you so much, everyone, joining us. This is a lot of fun. We had great times talking to guys like Dan. Again, usually we're here from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. Tonight was a special time at 7. But thank you all for jumping in. Again, please raise your hand. Come up here and talk to us. Again, it'd be great having you up here. Ask any question you want. It's easy. It's free. We don't bite. Again, invite friends in here every week. The more and more we get, the more and more people that are talking about USA Rugby and talking about the growth of the game, and just talking about the game in general, which is a nice thing to do. Again, it's not, you don't need an invite anymore for Clubhouse. You just join for free, and give us a follow on our bios. Give Dan a follow. Give myself a follow, and we'll follow you right back as well. And again, let's keep going. Let's talk rugby. So Dan, another 10 minutes left. Let's talk about USA a little bit more. We brushed on it earlier about whether we win or lose this match tomorrow, or if we win by 14 or more. The winner faces Uruguay for two matches. The loser faces Chile for two matches. Again, if we win coming out, we're in a pretty tough pool. If we lose, maybe not as tough, but we still have to get there. So is there like a preference? Like, do we need to face Uruguay? Do we need Chile? Is that even a thought, or is it just like, listen, we gotta just win this match by 14, go from there?
I think they'll have a tactical conversation about, they'll still have parts of the field and what they want to do, and they might have a few more wrinkles and a few more up tempo things going into this. Certainly, all of those things will come into factor. Game planning this. Some of the individuals. All that stuff put together. The U.S. has overcome deficits like this against this team before, right? Not to the, I mean, it wasn't 13 points, but they, have come into this before. Have beaten Canada, at a significant hop, before. So all of the capacity and proof points are there. It's just a matter of, that they'll have a game plan that is field specific. No, I think they'll have a game plan, a player plan specific to Canada, and a few more wrinkles in going into this game, so that they can, that they can play, a little bit of catch up.
Right. And Dan, we're going to wrap it up here in a few minutes here. Let's talk about your experience. And you played in the, what, 2003 World Cup, I think it was. But you also played in some really big matches with Bath, the Heineken Cup in 98. Let's talk about the experience at that level. What was that World Cup experience like for you?
I was lucky to play, and captain the 99 team, and then, play, kind of the servant leader with Dave Hodges in 2003, and then, also captain the team in a Sevens World Cup, and a lot of other profile games at different places. And I guess what I said before, that, the first thing that you have to understand, the first thing you have to get right, is probably the better way of saying this, is your team culture, right? Everyone has got to understand their role, execute their role, understand, how they fit in, the expectations laid out by the coaches. Everyone's got to fulfill those, right? And then there's the X's and O's of the game. There's a few fundamentals, right? Too high of an error count, too high of a penalty count, not being efficient when you get into try scoring capacities, which they weren't in the first half. U.S. wasn't in the first half. All of those things really, really, really come to bear when you're in games. And so that's where we were. You have confidence, going into that. When you look around, and you're like, oh, okay, everybody gets this. Everyone's up for this, right? So the questions, that you have on social media were, did they expect to walk the the team in Newfoundland, right? Were there too many injuries and not enough training time together? Was there, you know, because of different guys came in at different times, you know, who was, you know, all of those things that, you know, you have to be inside the, you know, the bubble to understand. They all play a significant factor into how a team is going to perform and then ultimately execute.
Right, exactly. So listen, guys, we're 5 minutes out. I think it's a good time to start talking about other things. Dan, a couple minutes left here. Let's talk about what's next for you. See you in the analyst booth soon with Peacock. What's next for you?
Yeah, so the premiership season starts next week. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Yep. I think I find myself on NBC Sports Network for the round four, the 9th and 10th of October. I'm looking forward to watching a couple of Eagle games. So this game and then certainly the next game that'll be at home in Glendale as well. And then, you know, certainly we got the two bigger U.S. games. So I'll be at both, you know, so I'm looking forward to both of those. There's some seven stuff happening, right? A young women's team was just announced for the Fast Four of Edmonton and Vancouver. You know, the men, the Dogs are back in training as well. So I'm not sure exactly what all those are on the broadcast side are going to look like yet. So I'm kind of waiting on and helping a few people just trying to make some decisions there. So, it's all – the fall is a little bit up in the air at this point, but, a ton of action, to say the least.
Yeah, exciting as a viewer like myself, and exciting for you as well, you know, being in the game for many years and still in the game. Dan, everybody, thank you for joining us tonight. Dan, thanks so much for your input. It's been a blast talking to you, and good luck in your touch game tonight. Score a couple tries for us.
Yeah, as you can tell, I just jumped in my car, so this is the beauty of this forum, right? You can do it on your go, right? So appreciate you having me, and love talking about the game, and hope everyone enjoyed at least a little bit of a sliver there. But look forward to listening to you next one.
All right, Dan, thank you everybody for joining us, and we will cheer on the Eagles, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks again, Dan. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys. Take care.